side fence with a military road running down it. So sadly, we did not succeed today.
There's a saying in life, don't always put down to malice what you could put down to bureaucracy. Perhaps it was just the wrong paperwork. I guess you prepared ahead.
We prepared ahead and the paperwork was perfect and the gate was perfect. And we believe that from the people living there that this has happened many times and that this gate is erratically opened and has been for the last couple of months.
So I guess in a way you were expecting the worst, weren't you?
We were expecting the worst, but it's always rather unpleasant to have it confirmed.
Tell us a little bit about the school and the partnership that you have out there.
Well, we have a partnership with many groups out here. Basically, we are twinning with two best in the Jordan Valley, because the Jordan Valley is perhaps one of the forgotten areas of Palestine. Since the occupation in 1967, it's been completely occupied, obviously, by the Israeli army, and many of the Palestinians there have lost their land. It's largely a farming area, and when you travel in the Jordan Valley, what you see is a lot of parched farms, bars of stones where once were farms, and the whole valley is actually full of very lush settlements. Israel has imported thousands of settlers there. They now control 95% of the water, so the farmers in the Tubas and Jordan Valley area don't have access to water to irrigate their land, and their lands have been confiscated. So as farmers with no land and no water, they have to go and work in settlement farms for very poor wages. And one of the areas that we visited, which is called Fasail, is very small, it's one of the poorest villages I have ever seen. The people there are not allowed to renovate their homes, so if they fall down, they can only use temporary plastic sheeting to repair them. They're not allowed to build any more homes, and they're not allowed to build schools. So what we have done, because we think this is absolutely outrageous, is we have got together and we are building a school there, and it's nearly finished, and it's made of mud and straw bricks, and the hope is that when it's completed it will be school for 115 village children. But it is at the moment under a demolition order as an illegal building, so we have to wait and see what will happen. But we're determined, if they pull it down, we will build another one.
So you're saying the school isn't finished yet and it's already under a demolition order?
Yes, at the moment it's a mud brick shell with a tin roof. It still needs cementing and plastering and rendering, and it needs windows putting in. But the demolition order was served last week, and they can come and do it at any time.
And Anne, I think we ought to point out, this is more than just a school trip. It's not quite a school trip, actually, is it?
It's not
a school trip.
A school trip, how do you mean?
Out there, you're taking students out there, so it's more than just a school trip, is what I'm trying to say.
It isn't a school trip. Yeah. No, I mean, our twinning is with a lot of other groups here. We're doing work with the Prisoner Society. We're doing work with the women's groups. We're doing work with the Red Crescent, which is the Palestinian Red Cross. And basically we're partly on a fact-finding tour, and we're making links also between school children in Brighton and Hove and school children in Tubas region, so that they can write to each other and have cultural awareness and know what their lives are like.
It's always good to find out what other people's lives are like, particularly people who are under such pressure, and there are both sides to every story. You're on a fact-finding mission. You mentioned human rights abuses out there. What other alleged human rights abuses have you heard of or witnessed?
Well, I think, in our opinion, the whole occupation since 1967 is one huge obscene human rights abuse. We've met so many families when we've been here, and every single family has got a story to tell, whether it's about a woman who has had to go to hospital but not been allowed through and has had to give birth to her baby at a checkpoint, whether it's a woman who has been arrested and interrogated for 2 weeks without charge, because the military want to know where some of her family are. Whether it's people who are unable to go to their school or their universities, because the checkpoint system means that you can be kept waiting for anything up to a whole day. The whole checkpoint system actually is strangling the economy because farmers can't get their crops to market. And we believe that everybody has the human right to education, healthcare, a decent life. And every single Palestinian in this area is being denied that because they're under military law and they don't have any rights, basically.
And Anne, what do you say to people who say, okay, you call it human abuse, human rights abuse, but to some people, that's self-defence, bearing in mind the past history?
What do you mean? Can you explain?
Terrorism, attacks, borders being open, security being abused.
Well, you only have to look at the so-called security fence. We saw it today. If it was a real security fence, it would be on the green line, but it bites deep into Palestinian territory. It destroys Palestinians' lives. They can't get to their land, which we saw today. They're very poor farmers, and their olive harvest is essential to them. This is not, in our view, a security fence. It's a land grab, and when you travel from Jerusalem up here, what you can see are massive settlements perched on the hilltops, like almost like cities. And when you travel up the Jordan Valley, you see these miserable little villages, all piles of stones from which people have been expelled. And this has nothing to do with security. All this is about is grabbing the land for Israel and using it for Israel. This is an area that in the Jordan Valley they do not want to give up. They've said this. It's the richest farming area. And the settlements in this area can export crops and do export crops to Europe within 24 hours, while Palestinian farmers can't even get their fields of crops to market.
And it's good to talk to you live out there on that trip to Palestine. What we'll do is, when you get back here, when you hope to be back?
I should be back there next week.
Okay, let's have a talk with you when you've got your thoughts together and find out what the results and perhaps bring in some of the people you took with you, okay?
That would be excellent.
And stay safe.
Thank you for giving us the space to explain the situation here, because I think a lot of people at home just don't understand
what the reality is. Anne Hallam, we'll leave you to it. Thank you so very much for joining us this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anne Hallam out there on that fact-finding mission with the Brighton Tubas Friendship and Solidarity Group, as you'll gather, a pro-Palestinian group. Listening to that was Jerry Adler, an Israeli expat who lives in Brighton and is writing a book about the Arab-Israeli conflict and joins me now. Hi there, Jerry.
Good morning to you.
Jerry, it's good to have you here, and you were listening to that conversation I was having with Anne out in Hallam. I'd like your reactions.
Well, first of all, the statement that she's been making is, I'm afraid, of full of a lot of inaccuracies. There were so many issues here that it's difficult to pick them out. But one of them I would like to mention is two of them is, first of all, the security fence and is building on the green line. Let's deal with that for a second. The green line is not a boundary. It was a ceasefire line. And to argue that Israel had no right to put a security fence within the Palestinian area is wrong in terms of international law. The fact is that the land has been under dispute ever since 1947. And the green line is in no way an international boundary. Consequently, when Israel took defensive action in 1967 and subsequently in a result of the terrorism has erected the barrier there, it's unfortunate that there is harm, and the Israeli Supreme Court has taken steps to ensure, to try to minimize the injury to the civilian, the Arab Palestinians who can't get to their land. She also mentioned, I was really shocked here, she says that the fence is electrified. It is not electrified at all. It happens to be electronic. And all it does is give extra warning to the Israeli patrols that somebody's trying to penetrate the fence. But let's deal with the facts that supposedly brought this pro-Palestinian group to the Middle East. First of all, they've gone to structure or help in the construction of a village, construction of a school. Now, we're all in favor of schools, and we want to try to cooperate and try to bring about a peaceful solution through negotiation. But I have the feeling that from her discussion or from her talk, that she represents a group of people who have tried to provoke a reaction in order to confront Israeli authority, because they're against the occupation. But the occupation need not have occurred. I mean, I think she forgets that the fence was put up as a result of terrorist action started in the year 2001. But prior to 2000 and from 1967, there were no barriers at all between Palestine or the Palestinian area and Israel. And traffic and people move very, very freely. It was only when the terrorist action and the suicide bombers started to occur that Israel tried a number of strategies, targeted killing, which has been again been condemned. They've tried a number of administrative and military strategies to prevent terrorism, and that hasn't worked. And so the fence...
Jerry, just let me come in on that one.
Yes.
Although despicable, terrorism usually has a reason, albeit misguided. Why is there terrorism? Why are there suicides?
Well, I'm glad you raised that, because it originally... One would have thought it's because of the despair and the frustration and the poverty. But that's not the situation. For the most part, the terrorist bombers, in fact, are middle class and relatively well educated. I'm afraid it goes back to Islamic fundamentalism, that there is a strength, or there is a belief that in the struggle, in death, one is able to achieve the path to paradise, and the purpose is to extend Islamic fundamentalism and the application of Sharia law, and it is an abomination for an extreme Muslim to be subject to what is called a jimmy, that is, a person of the book who is either Christian or Jewish. And it is intolerable that there should be a jimmy state, that is, a non-Islamic state in the Middle East.
But as an Israeli, you can understand people wanting their own state, surely.
But they've had the chance to have their own state ever since 1922. There was an opportunity, or 1936, there was a suggestion of partition in the West Bank. The Peel Commission suggested that, and that was turned down. Again, in 1948, the UN Resolution 181 presented a divided Western Palestine, and again, that was turned down. And when Israel was established in 1948, immediately after its establishment, there was an offer to set up a Palestinian state, but instead, Israel was invaded by five Arab armies. And I just remind you, after 1967, 10 days after the Six-Day War, Israel issued again an offer to settle down and to negotiate for a peace settlement. Now, these have been ignored and rejected. I just have to remind you, of course, until 2000 and 2001, when under the basis of Resolution 242, Arafat refused to continue negotiation and demanded, as a result of the of Clinton's initiative, that there should be a right of return for all Palestinians back into what is known as Israel, and that effectively would eliminate a two-state solution. So Israel has always been willing to agree and set forth a peace forum and to have a two-state solution, but we have extremists unfortunately also on both sides.
But aren't they going to make a meal of the fact that people aren't allowed to go to school, aren't allowed to go to work, aren't allowed to go about their everyday life? Surely that is oxygen to terrorism.
Well, but they are. But the point is, Israel cannot possibly allow the removal of a fence where the terrorists take advantage of the freedom of movement and come and blow up Israeli children. Look, your reporter from the other side mentioned everybody has a right to life and the rest of it. I don't want to mention to you how many Katyusha rockets have been fired on Shderot, which is an Israeli town outside the Gaza Strip. Ever since Israel withdrew 6 months ago or 9 months ago from the Gaza, that town has been rained upon with rockets on a daily basis. And kids are not free to go to school. Kids are not free to go out and play. And if you talk about the major cities, I've been in Jerusalem and I've been subject to a terrorist bomb. Thank God I was about 150 yards away. And I tell you something, whenever I get onto a bus in Israel, I look around and I see what's in people's bags and I look around and I get very, very concerned, as do most other Israelis, when we cannot even go to a cinema without thinking, how many steps is down to the cinema? If a bomb goes off, can I get out of here easily?
Jerry, I'm going to stop you there, and I want to talk to you again when the book's out, okay?
That's fine, but one thing I would like to add is that the area in which the ladies were putting their school is they could have easily applied for a building permit, and I'm sure the Israeli authorities would have been assisting in getting a building permit through for the school. I'm told by the coordinator of the civilian activities in the territories that the school is built on public state land without a license, without a permit, and it's done as a piece of, I won't say provocation, but they failed to even apply for the necessary permits which are required under Jordanian law, which is being applied in the West Bank. So there's a thread here of disinformation which is not being displayed.
And I think you'll admit you've had your chance to actually put the other side.
Well, I think so.
Jerry Adler, thank you so very much.
Bye-bye.
I was talking to Jerry Adler, Israeli expat who lives in Brighton and writing a book about the Arab-Israeli conflict, and also before that, retired teacher and member of the Brighton Tubas Friendship and Solidarity Group, who are visiting on what they call a fact-finding trip in Palestine, and that was Anne Hallam. Now your thoughts, 08459 570057, particularly if I have any Jewish listeners listening at this moment now. I'd like your thoughts on that. If you are Israeli, please call me on 08459 570057. If I have any Arab listeners, if I have any Palestinian listeners, I'd like to hear from you. And of course, everybody else is allowed to join in. You can text me on 07786 20 70 70, and you can email me on gordon.astley@bbc.co.uk.
Every day, Drive Time in Sussex brings you the latest local, national and international news with our reporters from across Sussex and around the world. Plus, the latest travel news direct from Sylvie Blackmore at Highways Agency Control, and great Drive Time music.
Drive Time, weekday afternoons from 4 on BBC Southern Counties Radio.
Good stuff, eh? That was good. Hope you found it interesting. I certainly did. Thank you for your comments on our listening figures. You're more than kind. I'll get to Andy in Hassocks in just a little while, who thinks he should be Nerd of the Day. It's the anniversary of the first ever railway timetable. Are you a train spotter?